All right. I don't know about you guys, but that I'm weeping already. I was weeping in the back. Just, oh my goodness. So wonderful. Worship with you guys. And I am so hungry for heaven. A feast of Zion. Oh my goodness. Wow. Whew. Yeah. And I have to say, I had trouble going to sleep last night, which sometimes happens. But the thing that kept running through my mind was the feast. That's the word that kept coming to mind. Was the feast that you guys rolled out last night as we were talking about how the book of Ruth points to Jesus. And just, oh my goodness, like every aspect of the gospel and the glory of what Jesus did for us was just popping up, you know, from one table out to another. And oh my goodness, just thank you. It was really amazing. All right, so quick review, right? I should have thought of this earlier. I just thought of it this morning. But let's have some motions to go with this whole shortbread thing. Got to work off some of the calories, whatever. Anyway, so if you want to try to remember what are the steps we've talked about, okay, we could do it this way. So you read some Old Testament story, whatever it might be, and you're like, okay, now I need to apply this thing. Right? So the first thing you do is you locate yourself on the timeline that is gone. Okay? So let's everybody stand up if you're able. Okay? And you say, where am I in this story? So you say, you know, we're about here. Okay? So you picture yourself, here I am, right here on the timeline, time of Judges, if it's Ruth. Okay? And you say, okay, what's going on, right? So you can do this. Like, what is the situation? What is surrounding this character? What are the things that help me understand this situation better? Okay? Get that all down. Okay? And then you say, I should put my shortbread slide up here. Here we go. There we go. Okay, so what does it show about God? So here you are, you're Ruth or Naomi, whoever you are. You're in a situation on the timeline, right? You understand the situation. Right? What does it show about God? So you could do this. Okay? And try to figure out, okay, this and this and this and this I see about God in the book. Okay? And then you turn around to the beginning of the timeline and you say, okay, how those things that I've seen about God, what has he shown before? Right? How has he shown himself to be those things all through Israel's past? Right? And you soak that all in and you get the bigger, broader picture of who God is in those ways he showed himself in Ruth. Okay? And you come back here and you say, okay, so God, what was your message to the original readers of this story? Right? And you try to say, why did he write this down? What was his point? What was his message? And then once you kind of get a little handle on that as best you can, then you turn this way and you say, okay, how does all of that point ahead to its fulfillment in Christ? Right, and you get a feast like we got last night. And I hope you notice that as people were saying things that it showed about Jesus, they're all rooted right back in Ruth or in this that informed, that stood behind Ruth. It's all there in the Old Testament. Okay? And then, once you see the glories of what God has done in Jesus, you don't have to walk to the room, but you walk over here and you say, okay, I am united to Christ. Now, finally, I'm ready to apply this thing to my life. Okay? So, if I had thought of that Friday, we could have done this at each stage, but I didn't. So, you may sit down. Okay. Two more quick things. One is, Francine and I were talking last night, I guess, or this morning, last night, and I realized as we were talking, there were things that I had wanted to bring up either last night or this morning, and I forgot last night, so I'll do this morning. And that is just, we've talked about how in Ruth, and particularly in hearing about Naomi's internal processing, right, we just see how much God knows and cares and understands our situations. And as she was pointing out, you know, Jesus was considered and born out of wedlock. I'm sure that trailed him his whole life in that society. He was born in a manger, had to flee. He lived as a refugee in Egypt for his early years, right? Then he finally came back, couldn't go back home because things were dicey politically there, so he had to live somewhere else. He lived in Nazareth. And then we don't know much about his childhood, but from the time he started his ministry, he was persecuted actively all the time. He was basically homeless, right? I mean, I guess he could have gone home, but he... Is this not picking up? Can you hear me? Thank you. Homeless by choice, if you will. He was betrayed by his friends, abandoned, framed, right, went through a false trial, was falsely accused and wrongly executed. So he kind of gets it. So whatever it is we're facing, you know, don't feel like, well, he just doesn't understand. He gets it. He understands. So that, thank you, Francine, for reminding me about that. Okay. So how does the Book of Ruth apply to us after all the stuff we've done? And in one sense, it shouldn't. Right? It's a Jewish story. It's an ancient story of the people of Israel. So it really shouldn't apply to us. Unless you're ethnically Jewish. If we have any ethnically Jewish people here, then this is your story. But it shouldn't be our story. If I told you some exciting thing about a monumental chapter in Mongolian history, you'd be like, okay, that's cool. So... Right, that's the way the Book of Ruth should be for us. But because Ruth went with Naomi, and because Boaz was kind to her, right, and you fill in the rest of the story, they got married, they had a child, eventually it led to Jesus. Jesus, the true Israelite, adopts us, right, brings us into his family. Now it's our story, and that's why it's in our Bible. So thank you, Boaz and Ruth. All right, so finally we can apply this. Let's talk about David and Goliath for a second, okay? So I think probably most commonly the sermons you hear about David and Goliath, the point is, the application is, go out and fight your giants with faith in God, and he will give you victory. We are not David in the story. Jesus is David in the story. Right? He is the one. He is the word. He is the one who has already fought the battle. We are the mop-up troops. Right? We are the guys on the side who were waiting with bated breath to see who was going to win this contest to decide it all. And now our job is just to chase those Philistines down to, you know, wherever they were fleeing to. So sin in our own hearts, injustice in society, right? Bringing God's peace to the hurting person next to us or to the farthest parts of the world. That's our job. But we are not Goliath. So I was thinking in a minute, well, not a minute, a few minutes, I'm going to have you do some application in your own lives. But I thought it might be helpful to just sort of do something like that as an example. So I'm planning to talk about our experience as Al was dying and in the years after that. And that's great, and I'm happy to do that, you know, if you want to talk about that. But I feel like, remember we were talking about the toilet and the tsunami? I feel like there are times when you've come face to face with death, actually. All the stuff drops away and you're staring the tsunami in the face, right? And then it's easier to appreciate that Jesus absorbed that tsunami and he broke it up and it's not going to hit you. But I feel like most of the time, most of us are not out there with a curtain pulled away looking at the tsunami. We're dealing with the toilet that's overflowing. More helpful to choose an example that's more everyday life kind of stuff. So I asked my daughter Eowyn if I could talk about her situation, and she said, yeah, sure, that's fine. So I have tried many times to capture in words what their life is like, and I have failed every single time, but I'm going to make another stab at it. Okay, I will do my best. Okay, so I think I mentioned on Friday or whenever it was that her husband was laid off in February of 25, and that they sold their house, moved in with me in March of 25. Okay, so they have four children. I will introduce you to them. Adelaide is 9.5. She has ADHD at a level that is life-impacting. So it's not just that, you know, she has trouble paying attention. It's the grid through which she processes the world. It's I don't know if it comes from the ADHD, but she... It seems sometimes has trouble distinguishing between what actually happened and what didn't happen. I'm still trying to understand that. Anyway, she has very big emotions. She deals with a lot of anxiety, misses school sometimes because of it, you know, like a high level, whatever. The new issues surfacing recently that we're just trying to sort of get our hands around. Anyway, sweet kid, can be the sweetest, kindest person. She has been challenging from day one, and she and her mother push each other's buttons. Then there's Mary, for Joshua Meridoc. He's 7 and a half. He has profound autism. He is nonverbal. He was developing neurotypically, and then as he was heading up toward 2 years old, this came on, which is not altogether uncommon. So he had been learning words, but he lost those and just regressed. So he is nonverbal now. He is big. The first three kids are just enormous for their ages. He's very big, very strong, unbelievably coordinated. There is nothing he can't or won't climb. He loves to be up in high places, the higher the better. He's like a chimpanzee. I have some pictures. Okay, this is the Besters. So my daughter Eowyn, my son-in-law Ben, and then Adelaide, Mary, Chloe, Mercy. This was maybe 6 months ago. this. Here we go. Okay, see if you can find Mary in this picture. Those are his feet. Yep. 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 You get the idea. Yes. Talk more about him in a minute. Chloe is just turned five. She has many of the same sort of things as Addie. She's not been, you know, diagnosed, but she's probably got some similar ADHD things going on. She had significant speech delays, which have been making huge progress this year in preschool. And she's so proud. She came home, she says, "Mom, I can say spout." She was so excited. Yeah, she's a sweetie. Anyway, probably some cognitive delays or learning disabilities along with that. So some things she's up against. And then Mercy is going to be three this summer, and she is full-on, full-bore, two-year-old, feisty little thing. She probably has to be to survive in that pack. Anyway, not a lot of dull moments. So let me tell you a little about Mary. Mary is most of the time a pretty happy kid, which is a blessing. He loves his mom, and she absolutely loves him to death. It's really sweet to see. He is also kind of a tornado of destruction. A lot of kids, you know what kids are like. But he seems to experience the world through relative pressure. So, you know, how if I put my foot down on this, what will happen? How hard do I have to press? And then in what way will it crumple? Or whatever. So during the time that they lived with me, he, you know, snapped blades off the ceiling fans. And he will obsess about something that he likes to do for, you know, a few weeks or something. And that's all he wants to do. So all he wanted to do for a while was sit or swing on the door of my brand new washing machine, which now goes like this. We were sitting at dinner one night, and he was in the kitchen, and we heard this thunk, and a couple of people went to check it out, and I could hear them go, "Oh," and I'm like, "I don't want to know. I don't want to." Anyway, I had a brand new refrigerator. I just moved into this house, and I had to get some new appliances. Anyway, it's the kind of thing that has a freezer drawer on the bottom, and he had been standing on the handle of it and just snapped it off. And he serially abused the thermostat in one way after another. Anyway, he finally just pulled the thing right out of the wall. He put dents in the wall from where he would sit on the top of the back of a chair and, you know, tip over, pushed out the screens in my new window. You know, you get the picture. He loves to be up on high things, and if there's something up there with him that he doesn't want to have there, he just pushes it off, whatever it might be. He likes to throw food down from high places. It's just, none of it is malicious. It's just the way he does life. there are safety issues. He has incredible balance and coordination, thankfully, but you saw the kinds of places he likes to be. He does not have a lot of self-preservation instinct. Think of, like, the body of a 7-year-old with the coordination of a teenager and some of the development of an 18-month-old, maybe, and put all that together. So he will climb out of story windows. He will run in the road. For a while, the thing he wanted to do was to get inside my washing machine and try to close the door. Yeah. For a while, the thing he wanted to do was stand on the stovetop. There was nothing that would make him happy but to stand on the stovetop. I could just... Yeah, anyway, safety things. He went through a couple of very, very, very long poop phases where it would just be like everything would be smeared with poop all the time. Ben's sister started dating a guy seriously, and so that family, his parents and his sister and the boyfriend, called to like meet Eowyn and Ben by Zoom, and in the middle of the call, Addie goes running and she says, Mom, Mary's pooping in Granny's closet. I'm like, this poor boyfriend. Anyway, he's constantly at a flight risk, right? They call it elopement. He's always, if you don't have your eyes on him, he'll be gone. So about a month ago, we lost him. We were having a birthday party next door. And we were all kind of like, you know, keeping eyes. I got line of sight on Mary. Anyway, there must have been somewhere between 30 seconds and 2 minutes that nobody had an eye on him and he disappeared. So we checked everywhere, knocked on doors. The neighbors, God bless them all, came out with their... It wasn't dark yet, but they have flashlights and they're checking the creek behind the house, you know. Anyway, thankfully it only lasted about 20 minutes. But he was about 3/4 of a mile away on a busy road, just strolling along. And thankfully, there was a tow truck driver coming along, and that the driver has an autistic child. And so when he saw him walking along down in the street, up on the curb, and down in the street, and up in the curb with his fingers in his ears, he's like, I know what's happening here. And parked his truck across the road to stop traffic. And that call came in while Eowyn was on the phone with the police saying, my son is missing. So thankfully, they were able to reconnect very quickly. But... You know, if he, who knows how long he'd have walked and when he would eventually have figured out, oh, don't know where I am. So he can't talk. He can't tell somebody his name. He wouldn't know how to tell them his address. He wouldn't have a clue what an address even means. Anyway, and he will not, he does not like anything attached to himself. He frequently takes his clothes off, won't wear shoes. So they're trying to figure out what they can put on him to be a tracker thing that he won't get off. Anyway, so it means that Eowyn has to be constantly vigilant, hyper-vigilant, like every second. If you go to a park, unless it is 100% fenced with a gate he can't open, you have to have your eyes on him every second and not be too far away because he is fast, right? And you might not be able to catch him before he was in some kind of danger. She has to constantly be listening for the click of the door that leads out to the driveway. So they keep it deadbolted when he's home, but... Well, not Mercy, but the other two know how to unbolt it. If they go out, they close the door behind themselves, but it's not locked anymore. And so he's gone. Anyway, so really you always need to have one person on Mary at all times. And a second adult can probably just about handle the other three. They are quite a handful. But a lot of times it's just Eowyn there by herself. And so you can imagine what that's like. Social situations, they go to church every Sunday, and Mary sits on somebody's shoulders. And I mean, this kid is heavy. I worry about Eowyn's back. Eowyn and my oldest granddaughter, who often has him on her. Come around Halloween, they were Jack and the Beanstalk. She was a Beanstalk, and he was Jack. But anyway, he will sit on somebody's shoulders through a good part of the like singing and that sort of stuff. But then at sermon time, somebody, there's a rotation of people who take him out and just... wander with him and try to keep him from dangerous situations. Adelaide had a concert last Tuesday. It was her big year chorus concert in third grade. I got there just as it was sitting with the family, but he lasted for maybe a song and a half, and then Eowyn had to take him out, and then Chloe and Mercy were being apparently poorly behaved, And so Ben had to take them out. So I'm the only one who got to hear Addie's concert. That's hard on Addie, right? And that's not uncommon for siblings of special needs kids. The chaos is indescribable. There's the chaos of physical space. So every floor in the house is covered with toys and food and trash and books and papers, but clothes. Every floor in every room in the house is covered with clothes, and some of them are clean, and some of them are dirty, and some of them are out of size or seasoned and waiting to be packed away. And who knows which is which, you know? And Eowyn somehow gets the laundry through the washer and the dryer, but then it's in a laundry basket. And if it's a laundry basket, it's fair game, you know, for this. So then it's on the clothes, on the floor with the clothes that have not been washed yet, and nobody knows, so you swoop them all up and wash them again. It's just, it's amazing. No shoes are ever with their mate. No socks are ever with their mate. When they moved from Maryland, one of their friends spent 6 hours trying to put sock pairs together. Unbelievable. On the counters, you know, yay deep in stacks of critically important papers and Barbie dolls and Ben's diabetes supplies and markers and diapers and who knows what. The kids come into the kitchen and they will open a drawer. This, we're talking kitchen equipment, you know, and they'll just take something and disappear with it and you'll never see it again. There is nothing that is off limits. Drove me nuts. You can never find anything that you need, anything. I cannot tell you the time that we spent finding stuff, because anyway, it's like shoveling in a blizzard is the way I think of it. So sometimes if they're away, Lauren, my daughter-in-law, will go over, or I'll go over, and you could spend a whole day trying to bring order and put, guess which clothes are clean and dirty and whatever, and within an hour of the kids being back, you'd never know you'd been there. It is so discouraging. The noise is unbelievable. Chloe has a set of pipes that would make Bob Lyon really proud. I have never met a louder kid, and it's just, they've had her hearing checked, it's fine. The school, the preschool said, do you mind if we check her hearing? And I was like, knock yourself out. It was fine. I don't know why this kid has only one volume, but it is unbelievably loud. Eowyn, I'm sure, has hearing damage. I remember one night sitting at the dining room table, and Chloe was at the top of her lungs doing whatever she was doing, singing or something, and Mary was vocalizing. He can make sound, he just doesn't have words. Vocalizing, and Mercy was probably screaming in her high chair, and I don't remember what added. Anyway, all four kids are just noise, 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 and the adults are trying to have a conversation, an important communication. It's like, you know, wedding receptions where the band's too loud, to shout to be heard by the person. That's what it was like, and I'm like, there would be times in the day where it's like, I cannot take in any more noise. I just have to get out of here. Anyway, school stuff. Life is so chaotic. It is really hard for Eowyn to do just the normal parent support stuff of a child in school. You know, helping Addie learn her spelling words for the week. Nope, not happening. Helping, you know, working with Chloe, reinforcing the speech stuff that she's doing that's making such progress. Nope, not happening. Trying to help Mary learn a little talker machine where you press a button and it says a word. At potty training Mercy, she is so ready. We made a first stab at it, but there's no time to devote to stay on it. Like, it's just, there is no bandwidth for just the normal stuff to support these kids. IEPs are just so, you've got three kids with IEPs, and they're just discouraging reminders that you're not. It's hard to find time just to read to the kids. Laundry and dishes. So when the 6 months we lived together, I'm like, okay, I will be the laundry and the dish person. I will stay on top of this thing. And I did. But let me tell you, if those clothes come out of the dryer, you better get them folded and back in the drawers right now, or it's all for naught. So I would spend 4 hours, sometimes up to 6 hours a day, just on laundry and dishes. It's incredible. And I have a little bit of PTSD, I think, because when I've been at their house recently, and it's like, I've got a half an hour, let me look around and see what I can do. And there are multiple choices. I never choose laundry. So it's like, these memories of, you know, just six laundry baskets worth of stuff, and I would use my bed, and you sort them into the different people's piles, and it's just like, yeah, I'll do something else. Thanks. But anyone can't check out of that. Like, that's her life. She's got to do the laundry whether she's got PTSD or not. The kids don't do chores. They don't really have responsibilities. There's none of that sense. We're a family. We're a team. This is my part that I can contribute to help, just not there. They don't understand that after you open a package of fruit snacks, you should put the package in the trash, not on the floor. Just not a piece of what they think of. They're not particularly interested in obeying, I would say. But for me, the thing that would put me in the grave is lack of sleep. They are all terrible sleepers. Actually, that's not true. Chloe is not bad. But Mary is up some part of every night, not infrequently from like 11:30 to 5. So he will get at Eowyn and Ben's bed. And sometimes he goes back to sleep. That's a really good night. And sometimes he's a kind of restless sleeper, so it's not great sleep, but you're asleep. Often when he gets in that bed, Ben goes and gets in his bed. So then it's Eowyn and Mary, and he's thrashing around in the bed. But a lot of times he just doesn't sleep. And he's awake and sometimes happy and sometimes he's sad. But when they were living with me, all four kids were in one room. Thankfully it was a big room, but they were all in one room. So you can't just like let him roam or do his thing. So you had to take him somewhere. So I cannot tell you the nights that Eowyn would go drive him around for an hour or two, and then Ben would drive him around for an hour or two, and then Eowyn would drive him around for an hour or two. I can't tell you how many times Eowyn and Mary ended up at Denny's at 3 in the morning because she was too tired to drive safely, and they had to go somewhere, and Denny's was open. So they got to be Denny's regulars with the post-casino crowd who were all in there at 3. Anyway, I was trying to think. I asked her, I said, just estimate, how many uninterrupted 8-hour nights of sleep do you think you've had since Addie was born? That's 9.5 years. And she said, actually, there was a stretch before Chloe was born, before the autism set in, when they had a stretch. I don't know what a stretch means, a couple months or something, that was pretty decent sleep. But if you bracket out that stretch, whatever that stretch means, in 9.5 years, which is 113 months, which is 3,438 nights as of today, maybe 10. Probably 5, but maybe 10. But it's less than that. It's, you know, and even if you add up the pieces, they never add up to 8 hours. Maybe it's 6. 6 is a pretty good, if you can get 6 hours pieced together for a long stretch, that's good. But often it's 2. And she'll just go, you know, a week at a time of 2 hours. I don't know how she does it. I do not handle lack of sleep very well at all. But somehow she keeps going. But she is a human being and she's fine. And I worry. I worry a lot about the effect that will have on her. Anyway, so I look at the situation and I can look at it and I can say, there are things we could change here, right? We could do training in 3 or 4 or 5 different areas of fairly low-hanging fruit. It would take some commitment. It would take some input. But we could change things that would make a little bit of measurable difference, and the bandwidth is just not there. And so to me, it looks hopeless. I don't know what we'll do. We've talked about getting a team together, and once a week or once a month, even somebody sleeping at the house and letting Eowyn and Ben go sleep somewhere else so they actually get a night's sleep. Maybe we can. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but it feels overwhelming. So, anyway, sorry. I hope you are not facing that situation, but I'll bet you're facing something. So, let's see if I can do this without hitting my microphone. So, let's take a look at the book of Ruth and say, what hope does it have for that situation? So, not everything we've looked at, but I'll just pick some. Okay, we talked about how God loves those who are inherently vulnerable. He loves Mary. And he loves him just the way he is. And society would probably look at Mary and say, this kid doesn't have any value. He is never going to contribute domestic product or whatever that term is. Right? He's a drain. And I will confess to you that every time Mary broke another one of my expensive appliances or that thing my dad made when I was a kid that hangs on the bathroom wall, it's just like, oh, dude, seriously? But God loves Mary just so he is. And that is really helpful to a mother's heart, to know that she's not the only one who feels that way about this kid. But God does too. God knows and he cares. He gets it. And one of the things I am learning, I'm so new to the whole world of having a special needs child, but I think of you, Catherine Johnson, the whole lot. But one of the things that's hard, you don't get it. If you're not living it, you can't get it, right? And I, even having lived it, sort of still just starting to get it. And one of the things is you feel so unseen. Because, and even, you know, really, we'll say, hey, you know, why don't you join us? We're going to the park and we can all, you know, we can bring picnic blankets and sit and talk and the kids can play. You can't take Mary to that situation. He'll be off in the woods just like that. Or you can go, but you'll spend the whole time with him and not sitting on the blankets chatting with the friends. But the friends don't know that. They don't, they haven't left. I think you can feel really isolated and just not understood. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just you don't get it if you're not living it. And so the fact that God gets it, he understands what they're up against, what the limitations are. And not only that, but Jesus prays for us. That's incredible. We have a friend, a woman in my community group, who struggles with insomnia. And sometimes she'll text Aon to me and she'll say, hey, I was awake at 2 o'clock and I was praying for you guys and the Lord brought this verse to mind. And it's like, somebody was awake at 2 o'clock in the morning praying for us. That, you don't know how much that means. And yet Jesus prays for us all the time because he gets it. Huh. You know, God orchestrates everything. It's another thing we saw in Ruth. He is the one who gave Aelin these particular children with these particular needs. And he chose her to be their mom. Yes. This was not just a random thing that happened when he wasn't looking and now he's caught short and thinking, oh, shoot, what are we going to do about this? Like, this was his plan. And the fact that it's his plan means there's purpose in it. It's not just random. And you may not know what the purpose is yet. It has one. And if nothing else, I think families in this church, I think of, you know, Tina and Tori, and just watching her love Tori, just to my heart, it's and all by every time. So if nothing else, there's that purpose, right? But there may be other things too. And he will be in it with her, and he will walk it with her, and he will provide what she needs. I can't this situation to say, I have no idea. This feels hopeless to me. But he knows, he understands, and he will provide somehow what she needs. You know, we talked about God bringing life into situations of death. There's all kinds of death. There's physical death, but there's also the death of dreams, of what you thought life was going to look like. And there was a time a few years ago when, I can't remember if Aelin lost her phone or the phone died or there was something, whatever it was, she lost all the pictures and recordings that had been on her phone. And that included Mary saying words. Yeah. His first word was actually amen. It's just, yeah. I don't remember what his last word was, but apple, I think. Anyway, those recordings are gone. And she says, you know, I think God was being very clear. You need to let go of that boy. And you need to love the boy I've given you now. Which she does. But, you know, God read you. And there will be new dreams. And she says, you know, she needs to lean into where God has her now. And trust him. And he will resurrect those things. Another sort of death is that she is somebody who loves to serve. She loves nothing better than, you know, bake some cookies and buy some flowers and go take them to somebody who's sad or recovering or, you know, like just that is her heart. That's what brings her life. And now she can do so little of that. She does anything she can, but that's another loss. But, you know, I just won't be surprised if down the road she has a ministry to parents of special needs kids. And she will have a compassion that was hard won and well worth it. Anyway, one of the longings, I was going to mention the longings that you guys submitted, but one of them is like just safety and security. And, you know, Mary is safe in God's hands. And that does not mean, she has said, you know, it doesn't mean that he won't fall from some ridiculous height or get hit by a car in the road or shut himself inside the washing machine and suffocate or any number of other things that are hazards of the way he does life. You know, autistic kids are 160 times, not percent, but times more likely to drown. Yeah. But we always told our kids growing up that our lives are in God's hands, and if it is not the time that God has appointed for you to die, you can spend 3 days and nights in shark-infested waters, and you will not die. And if it is the time God has appointed for you to die, you can drown in a thimble full of water. Our lives are in his hands. And so, obviously, you do everything you can to protect the kids and keep them safe, but it lets off a lot of the pressure to feel like Mary is in God's hands, and God will keep him and protect him, and if he dies by any of these means, it will be because that was the way and the time God had appointed for him. Yeah, I think there's a comfort in that. We talked about how God accepts righteous Gentiles, receives righteous Gentiles. So thankfully, now he receives Christ's merit and not our own. And you can imagine that Eowyn feels like a failure all the time in every area. And thankfully, her righteousness before the Lord doesn't depend on that. It depends on what Jesus did. And boy, that's a huge relief too. And lastly, God works through people. And we have all experienced that. He gives us his family. He knits us in. And when one part hurts, the others rally around and help it. And we have seen that. They saw that in their church in Maryland. We see it now in the church in New Hampshire. Eowyn saw it here at New Life when she was growing up. And that is such a blessing. And to me, as I look at the situation, that's the only place I can see hope, help and hope coming from, is people rallying around, which they are. Next Saturday, my community group is installing a fence around their backyard, which should help a lot. Anyway, sorry, that took longer than I meant it to. Except to say at the end, like, the call, one of the calls to us, I think, is to be the church, to be his family. And you guys do that so well. So don't grow weary in doing good. Keep doing that for each other. Anyway, okay, so what we're going to do, I have no idea where I am time-wise. I've completely lost track. I'm going to give you, let's say, 8 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes, something like that. And what we're going to do is, let's have 5 to 8 minutes or so of silence. And just yourself, individually, listen to the Holy Spirit and say, of everything we've talked about this weekend, Lord, what do you want to say to me? And you know what you're dealing with. You know what the heart that's facing you. He does. Probably nobody else does, or not many. But just sit with him and say, Lord, what do you want to say to me right now from the book of Ruth? And particularly, what we've seen of God in the book of Ruth fulfilled in Jesus. So I will clap my hands or something, you know, when the time is over, and then there's something we'll do after that. But just take some time now. Let's just let the Holy Spirit speak to each of us. Okay? All right. Then what I would like to do for the next 8 or 10 minutes, let's say, is give people an opportunity to share at your tables anything that you would like to. There is zero pressure. If you don't feel comfortable sharing, don't do it, okay? Or maybe you can share a small part of something that feels safer. Please hear me, there is no pressure at all to share anything. But maybe there is a person or two at each table who might feel comfortable sharing something that a way that the Lord has spoken to them, right, through the book of Ruth. And if there is nobody at your table that feels comfortable, that's okay too. You could just talk about things you've learned this weekend, or anything that you have gained over the weekend. Okay? So, please hear me. No pressure. But if you would feel comfortable sharing with your table any aspect of something that the Lord has spoken to you, it probably would encourage your table mates. Okay? And then after that, we'll come back together and see if there is anybody who would like to share something with the whole group. Again, if there is not, totally fine. Okay? Okay, go ahead. Is there anyone who would like to share something with the whole group? It can be someone who shared at your tables. It can be somebody who didn't have a chance to. Doesn't have to be anybody. Thank you. Yeah. Say one thing, I don't know if it's appropriate, but I think it's funny. When Catherine was talking about, you know, the way you thought things were going to be with your kids. I remember Eowyn showed me a meme years ago, and it says some mother saying, "I was so excited when I had a little girl, and I could just imagine, you know, when her hair got long, and I would be doing these beautiful braids." And she said, "It turns out it's more like an exorcism." but it's true. Life is often not what we expected. Oh. Anyway, yes? We're good? Okay. There's always that balance between something that somebody has shared at the retreat can stay at the retreat, in a sense, right? Respect other people's confidences at the same time that we do exactly what Deborah was saying, be open with each other. Be transparent, be honest, say this is what I'm struggling with, this is what's really hard, this is where I feel like I'm failing. And thankfully God's mercy just covers all of it, because Christ's death and resurrection is that big. Praise God. I think Bree has set up, or is going to set up, I don't know how technology works, a folder or a something or other. She'll tell you how to get access to that. I'm happy to put the slides that have been up here in that, if that would be helpful. There'll be a timeline and other resources. So, just for my curiosity, do you feel as if now, today, Sunday morning, relative to Friday night, do you feel like you have some better sense of how to apply Old Testament stories to today? Okay, then that's a win.